This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome to Tuesday.
Welcome to Tuesday.
It's
start
not
of the work
Monday.
Week. Here we are. We had a holiday. I had a great holiday.
I did too.
Tons of people at my house. We had.
You
a,
did?
Yeah. I stood at that grill for over 2 hours straight.
My invite must have gotten lost.
It did. We had to go small. It was great. Stood at the grill for over 2 hours straight. Lots of great dear friends and friends of friends came over, and we celebrated a son's birthday and, of course, Memorial Day.
Yes.
Which is, sometimes feels odd when you are celebrating and enjoying and flying the flag and remembering all those who lost their lives for our freedom.
We remember. We don't really celebrate.
My sons, actually, one of my sons actually put this on my former pickup. He saw the bumper sticker. He liked it. And I love the phrase as well. But, you know, home of the free because of the brave.
That is true.
And it wasn't even me. It was like my son was a teenager. And they were so patriotic. So I'm very proud of both of them.
Nice.
Anyway, because of the brave. And they go in there and they defend our freedom. And some lose their lives. And we lose our family members, our sons and fathers and all that, but here we are, free America. So gratitude to them. Had a great time. It was great to see some parts of our social network and our community and celebrate the day. Mm-hmm. You had a good day as well.
I did. We had a great weekend home. Did a lot of tree trimming and bush trimming, probably about 2 feet off the hedge. It was out of control.
You know how to have a good time.
Yeah, that's such a good time.
You go to Home Depot and it's like, well, all these people, this is what they're going to do. They're not the people who are not camping, and they're at Home Depot and Lowe's, right?
This is true.
It's funny. Hey, well, welcome to Newsmakers, everyone. This is the top of your noon hour, and Newsmakers is here on KYKN, where you get to learn about local issues, and sometimes broader than that, things that affect your wallet, things that affect your quality of life, and things that affect your community. So, welcome. I want to talk a little bit this top of the hour about Detroit. Detroit, or as a lot of people in this region say, Detroit.
Detroit Lake.
Detroit.
Yeah.
I hear that a lot. It's the city's Detroit, but when they refer to the lake, a lot of people, after I first moved here almost 30 years ago,
right.
Like, Detroit, it's just an interesting pronunciation.
It is Detroit Lake.
Detroit.
Yeah.
All right. I'm sticking with Detroit. And the Army Corps of Engineers, and they've modified, after getting a lot of input, they've modified their plans.
They got a lot of flack for it, basically.
Cooling tower, the whole slap your forehead, what the bejibbers are you doing?
Yeah.
So
what are they still doing?
They still want to do it.
My question is why?
Save the fish.
Okay.
Why are they building it?
Yep. We had this problem because...
Okay, so... Every now and then, I keep pointing out, if you read articles, magazine articles, news articles, somewhere there's something that is a hint to what's behind the curtain.
Okay,
right?
All right.
So this, the Corps, Army Corps of Engineers, that were saying they have to do this cooling tower, and the cooling tower will adjust the temperature for the waters that are going downstream to a more appropriate, conducive a temperature for the fish to spawn in. That's the point of that.
Is it warming it up? Cooling it down?
Yes.
Both?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
So
it's like a big thermometer heating thing in your aquarium?
They blend the waters from the different depths of the lake. So you're not just skimming off the hot water on the top and very cold water at the bottom kind of thing.
Wouldn't fish know where to go in the middle?
But it's not in the middle. It's the water that they release. The water that they're releasing into the Narsanium.
Okay, all right.
So why are they building it? They say they're legally required to undertake the project to improve fish passage and the temperatures for endangered salmon and steelhead.
Legally.
Next line. The legal agreement was reached in 2008 called the Biological Opinion. In capital letters, it's called the Biological Opinion. It requires the Corps to modify dams to improve the habitat. That's what's behind the curtain, is the biological opinion that happened 11 years ago. Now, I don't see anything in this article about the biological opinion or who was party to it. Did it result from a lawsuit of environmentalists? Did it result from a legislative action, administrative action, regulatory action?
There's one word in there that gives it away. Opinion.
Opinion. And here we are looking to spend $350 to $500 million dollars of taxpayer money to do this.
They could build two bridges for that. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Anyway, so the good news is they're not going to require that Detroit Dam not get filled, which was with the original proposal.
Yeah, they were going to
for
drain
a couple
it.
Of seasons.
Wow.
They're just going to keep it empty so they could do this construction project, which I'm not quite figure out. Well, you know, what the fish do in the interim while they're...
Take a vacation in another stream.
Yeah. and so there are some. I mean, of course, you've got both sides. You've got environmentalists think that doesn't do enough. And then you have other people saying, you know what? You don't even know if it's going to work.
No.
It's going to be a lot of money and a lot of...
a lot of money is the understatement.
Yes. Yes. So the Corps, it points to the McKenzie River, Cougar Reservoir on the McKenzie. There we go. And they said when it was built, you know, the fish went to nothing, and then they corrected the temperatures and the fish returned. So they view that as an example of one that works. Detractors, however, look at the Round Butte Dam in Deschutes. And that was just completed in 2012. It's owned by PGE, by the way.
Okay.
So they installed one of these fish collection facilities, and it has not been successful. So they're like, all right, well, you have an opinion, and you think this might work, and one of them worked, and it's, oh, but we'll spend $500 million.
So it's a 50-50 chance it'll work.
This is one of those things that sometimes, and a lot of these things come from activism on the left, right? So you got activism on the left. And I'm not anti-fish. I want to, you know, but.
They are just
dubious.
Fish.
Activism on the left, and then some other activists on the left have to be looking at that and said, what about the homeless? What could you do with $500 million about the homeless?
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
What about the fill in the blank? What about the transgender, which we'll get to that in a little bit.
Oh, my God. No.
What about the blah, right? What about carbon emissions? Everything else, what could you do with $500 million other than build a cooling tower and, you know, it's more expensive, see, because part of it have to be constructed while it's underwater.
Right. Yeah. Good luck with that.
Yeah. All right. Also in the news, a couple of legislative bills having to do with teen suicide. A couple of interesting factoids coming out of that. So let's swing around right after the break. We'll take a quick break, come back, and we'll talk about what just passed at the Oregon Legislature. This is Brent DeHart. I'm with Dave Bourne on Newsmakers 1430 KYKN. Salem's listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by our friends at Green Acres Landscape.
Welcome back, folks. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, and you're listening to Newsmakers. We're talking about the legislature, a couple of bills that just got passed in tandem having to do with the unfortunate subject of teen suicide.
Oh,
speaking
man.
Of which, of course, we had elections last week, and we had Dr. Chandragiri elected, and that's been one of his huge topics.
Yes, it
he
is.
Wants to talk about, and handling mental health in schools and how to handle emotional, and he's a psychiatrist, emotional issues and this and that, and he thinks he can bring a lot to the table.
He does bring a lot to the table.
Yeah. So
he's got solutions for it too.
The whole thing is so tragic, folks, that what's this even has to be a discussion. You know, that it's so prevalent, and it seems like everybody we know knows a family that's been touched by it. Anybody in my circle certainly who has been raising kids in Salem knows this all too well. So Senate Bill 52, this is going to require school districts to plan how to address and prevent suicide.
Wow.
I can't even imagine it was ever in anybody's minds a generation ago that a school's role would be to mandate to try to prevent suicides. for young kids. You have a whole life in front of you. The world is supposed to be seen in awe of the opportunity and the possibilities. And yet we have a society where young people are not seeing opportunity and possibilities. They're seeing this is a way out of having to experience life.
Wow.
In our culture, there's something seriously wrong with our
culture.
We could talk for days about that and the ways and the different ways that our society has changed in the last 50 and 60 years. And not all of them are for the better. And the role of social media, of course, in all of this.
That is a huge part of it.
All right. Here's a number. Blow your mind. 2017, 825 Oregonians died by suicide. It's one of the leading causes of death in Oregon, they say.
Wow.
I don't know what percentage that is, but sounds kind of dubious. However, for Oregonians aged 10 to 24, it's the second leading cause of death.
What?
Suicide.
Oh, my God.
Wow. And so, you know, really a concern is gay, bisexual, transgender youth, youth that are going through their sexual identity phase of crises, and we're all confused at 13, I'm pretty sure, in terms of, you know, what's life going to be like and everything else at 13, when our bodies and brains and our hormones run amok. But, you know, that's a high-risk student population are these kids who identify as gay, bisexual, transgender, and so forth. Anyway. And there was a second bill also that passed, 485. It requires them to report the suicides, suspected suicides or suicide attempts to Oregon health authorities so they can track these things. So it kind of works in tandem. And they say that then neither one of these worked unless we get the resources when it comes to have this plan. And the resources that they're claiming are coming from the tax bill we've been talking about the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So that tax bill did have counselors and mental health issues and this and that in the bill and paying for these things. But they said, well, now that we have the resources, we have the money to pay for these things and we can do something about it.
Well, I agree that more counselors are needed in schools because there never were enough when I was in school. And that was a long time ago.
All right. So this is the disconnect. And I've brought this to your attention in the past. But here's a very specific example, and here's a quote from Smith Warner. Really, what smacked us in the face everywhere was just the level of trauma that kids are dealing with at home, bringing to school, and trying to deal with at school. Our schools have become a de facto social service providers in our communities, yet we haven't really been funding him that way.
What?
So that's what I've been saying. We've been asked schools in America to handle their dental health and their emotional health and their the socialization, right, and their value system and their sexual orientation. And we're asking them to handle all of these like societal things because that's where the kids are. I get it. There's a building. They're collected. It's easier to bring social service elements into the schools. However, the people that work there, they went to school to be educators,
right,
and not social service workers.
Mm-hmm.
And you're taking it out of a budget, people, that's supposed to be educating kids, but you're having to spend education money on social services. Okay? And it sounds like I'm arguing against schools as collecting places of kids to be, you know, to provide social services, you know, feeding them and all these things. I'm not. I'm just saying, don't call it education funding. That money needs to come from social service funding.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, now we're going to, well, we got to make sure that nobody comes to school with an empty stomach. Nobody leaves school with an empty stomach. We've got to make sure that they have good dental. We have to make sure they, you know, that we mandatory report if anything's going on. And it's just all of these roles that the school has to play and the teachers have to play. Teachers as parents. Teachers as, well, they can't be disciplinarians anymore, right?
There's a problem
teachers
there.
As monitors, and the teachers just can't be the teachers and educate the kids in the field in which they're supposed to.
Yeah.
Okay? So it's a huge societal discussion here that I don't think is happening. I don't really think is happening. Should our schools be social service centers, or should they just be education centers?
Good point.
And if we're going to blend the two, which we have, clearly we're way down that road. If we're going to blend the two, then we should change how we describe and change how we fund it, how we describe that funding. So you could say you go off the social services bandwagon. You spent all this money, and all of them have all these social services available. Well, don't call it education money. That skews every education dollar statistic in the United States.
Pretty much.
So in Oregon, it's what 12th highest in education spending in the nation.
In the nation?
Yeah.
Okay.
12th highest. And
right.
We just added $1 billion a year to that.
So we should be the highest now.
We're going to be up there, aren't we?
Wow.
We're going to be up there in how much we spend per student. I think somebody said, don't quote me on this, folks, but it's like over $12,000 a year.
It is.
Yeah.
It's over that.
All right. Anyway, that's the one paragraph. That is, properly attribute, but the quote was from Representative Smith Warner, a Democrat out of Portland. She was the carrier of the Addies Act that passed anyway. But that is it. Our schools have become the de facto social service providers in our communities, yet we haven't really been funding them that way. I agree with what she said. We may disagree,
totally. Yeah.
She and I don't know, about how much social service role should take place in our schools, and is it hurting our ability to have kids read, write, and prepare themselves to be an adult, right?
Apparently, the graduation rate is still pretty sad.
And the reading.
Reading is, oh my goodness.
Wow. I'll be boring my grandkids with stories about, we had this governor, his Kitzhaber was his name, and he was the education governor, he said, and his goal was to have a higher percentage of third graders reading at a third grade level. We've talked about this too. I'm never going to get over that.
No.
I mean, it's very easy. Keep them in third grade until they're reading a third grade level.
Right.
Governor, it's not that hard. You don't push them on to fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth. What? That's your goal? Meet the age-appropriate leading layer? I mean,
wow.
If they're not, you're going to get them tutors, get the parents in, have them go to summer school, take mitigating actions right away. If you want to keep them with their class, you have to take mitigating actions right away.
Right.
Like, how is that a goal? I'm like, I can't believe that. I can't be the only person, right, Dave?
No, you are not the only one.
Wow.
Trust me. I'm right there, right there behind you.
That is your chance. To raise the percentage of third graders that are reading a third grade level. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
How about all third graders read a third grade level?
Mm-hmm.
That would be, now there's a goal.
Not just 90%.
Oh, and by the way, that's just the minimum you could do. I mean, really? That's a goal. But
it sounded good
in
really
the speech,
the
minimum,
Brent,
that you could do.
It sounded good in the speech.
All right. I'm going to move on. I think that is a discussion our society and our leaders need to have, in terms of maybe we do need to have people, and like the counselors, like you were saying, people who are social service workers in the schools to handle these things and take the burden off the teachers, folks.
Yes, teachers are not there to babysit your kids.
And teachers are not there to handle mental health crises.
No.
And there's a mental health crisis.
Yeah.
We're allowing mental health crises with these poor kids to disrupt the education of everybody else. And then they look at the graduation rates and the standardized scores and the reading rates. We got to figure this out, people. All right. We only have a couple minutes. A little ditty somebody sent me. Actually, Warren Franklin. Sometimes Warren's good for a little bit of information here and there.
Yeah,
you sit
totally
down with Warren. He's a good guy. Sent me this article coming out of Fox News. And this is something. It's not really news. It's just a different way of saying it, because these statistics already exist. But the headline is, you know, the teaser is that how much is a dollar worth in each state?
Right.
Right.
I read that story today.
Yeah. So how much is a dollar worth in each state? Well, of course we know that, because there's statistics on what the standard of living costs.
Right.
In New Hampshire, in North Carolina, in Oregon, Hawaii. They already know these things. Realtors know them. You know, but I like the way they put it. What is the value of a dollar in these different places? They just kind of flipped the language terminology. Of course, very expensive in New York. So $100, an average $1 bill is only going to buy you about $86.51 of goods in New York. So expensive there.
It is.
But in Mississippi, in case you're looking for a pleasant place to retire, You can go down to Mississippi, and your dollar will buy $115.74. $115.74 for the goods.
So party.
For the same $100, right? So,
if you can deal with the, you know, the bird-sized mosquitoes.
Yeah. Yes. Very pleasant things about Mississippi, but
and the heat.
The heat and the humidity. Bugs. And yeah. There's a reason why we live in Oregon.
That's true.
Anyway, what was amusing and enjoyable about this article is that it identified Oregon as one of the four states in which a buck was worth a buck.
That's a good thing.
Buck is worth a buck. It goes a dollar. So we're not overpaying. We have this average, I guess we'd call that the average cost of living in the United States we have here. Rhode Island, Florida, by the way, which surprised me. Florida and Delaware were the other states that said a dollar will buy you a dollar. Most expensive ones, New Jersey, California, and New York. And, of course, the grand champion, Hawaii. Everybody wants to move to Hawaii until you find out what it costs to buy anything there, right?
I lived there for 14 years.
You would know.
I do know.
All right. Hey, we're going to get personal right after the break.
Ooh.
Yeah. Something a lot of families are dealing with. A lot of people are going to have to face. And I'm going to tell the personal story. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Boren, and it is Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Boren on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Color Tile of Salem and Sylvan Learning Center.
Sometimes I just get caught up in that drum rhythm and just get fired up. Ready? Hey, welcome back to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Boren. This morning I had an opportunity to hear just a few snippets from the executive director of the Capitol Manor, just west of town. I'm sure if you've driven by, you've gone over the bridge, the singular bridge into West Salem, and you see a bunch of construction going on. And the Capitol Manor, and this is not a plug for the Capitol Manor, but he was talking about demand for what they do. And they're building a new memory unit. And actually, we had an interview with one of our communities not opening at South Salem as well, right, at Boone Ridge.
Yep.
And Capitol Manor is expanding theirs. And I think it's somewhere in the vicinity about 50 new living quarters for memory care.
Mm-hmm.
And they also have other projects going on, sprucing up the whole place, spending tens of millions of dollars out there. Wow. That is huge. And lest we forget, when they spend, that goes on the tax rolls, and that's more taxes that go into the city coffers and the county and the school district and all that. So reinvestment right in the community. So thanks to Capitol Manor for both their mission and, in fact, reinvesting and additionally investing in Salem. So they're expanding, they're remodeling, they're adding parking. So good stuff.
Good.
However, they said, why are we doing this? Because the demand's there. So the demand for baby boomers, you know, well-cited number, 10,000 baby boomers are retiring each and every day.
That's a lot.
In America, 10,000 baby boomers. So so on to my story. So my mother, I have three siblings, the four of us. Our mother is going into a memory care unit today.
Ooh.
Today is her first day moving in. It's a challenging topic to try to understand when you're suffering from dementia and or Alzheimer's.
Right. Right.
And it's very challenging for families. And I imagine we've got a listener right now who says, oh, yeah, you know, grandma or father-in-law or uncle. This morning, a gentleman I was sitting next to, yeah, it's my uncle. Today, it's my mom. But wow, it's somebody. Dementia, it's insidious human condition, and it robs you, and it robs the family. And they call it a disease, but I don't know. I think of a disease as being biological in nature. That's just how I internalize it. This is a human condition that affects and changes. And so in the case of my mother, you know, many people have known somebody with dementia, and so it's not really shocking or news. But, you know, she forgets that she does not live from her home state, which she left in 1970.
Wow.
Right? And yet she knows us as adult, middle-aged children.
Okay.
Right? but there's a disconnect there, but she's not finding it. So unfortunately, my mother lives every day waking up, and she doesn't know where she is or why she's there. But she knows us, and she still has her personality. And that is the heart-wrenching part of it.
Wow.
She'll know my high school friends. She will ask about them. My kids will make a joke with her, and she will laugh. She has her personality. But if she looks around the room where the home and what she lives for the last 3 years, she goes, why is all my furniture here? Where are we?
Hmm.
Right?
Okay.
There's no explaining it. You can't explain this because the disconnect in the brain. So what she remembers, what she doesn't remember, what she recognizes and doesn't recognize. But we were talking about, you know, activities of daily living and things that were robbed from you when we were talking to the Boone Bridge people.
Right.
And when you're incapable of doing some of the very basic activities of daily living, ADLs. I said, hey, everybody, remember that acronym, because we're all going to be dealing with them. And you need substantial care, who's going to do it? And is there family members? Are there family members? And this is the question my wife asked me, because we were talking about the cost of it. How do you pay for that?
Yeah.
How do you pay for that, folks? If you don't know the answer to that question, when you hear me ask it, you better do some work.
Mm.
How are you going to pay for that? With your parents or for yourself? Because it's not getting cheaper, and the government wants to pay less of it. Right. All right. So that's what I wanted to talk about. This segment is, folks, because I've dealt with this in my insurance world. Right. How are you going to pay? It's pretty limited. Your family can pay. Right. If you got kids, you got a rich uncle, your family can pay for your care. OK. So in the case of my mother, who's out of state in a smaller community, over $7,000 a month. And that's before
what?
That's before she's paid for her doctor visits, for her Medicare supplement plan, before she bought a new dress, anything, or any of her personal expenses, over $7,000 a month. That's hard. That's a tough ticket, folks.
None of us
are immune from getting dementia and Alzheimer's. None of us are immune for the frailties of old age. And it may not be mental and emotional and memory, but it may be other things. But the cost of care is extraordinary. So your family can pay it. That's number one. You've got, you know, four professionals that all went to med school or dental school or law school and are doing well, and then they get to pay out of pocket. Option two, you self-pay. So you're going to pay it out of the assets you spent your entire life trying to save. And this is the baby boomer's dilemma. This is the I'm planning for retirement dilemma, is I'm going to plan for retirement. However, if I get ALS, if I get Parkinson's, if I get fill in the blank, if I get dilapidated in my mental or physical health, my care can wipe out my retirement that I spent 40 plus years trying to build. Okay. So self-pay, though, is an option.
Wow.
Self-pay. Some people can. Long-term care insurance, of course.
But that only pays for so long, right?
It does, depending on, and that's a whole show. That's a whole educational hour in itself. And you want to find folks, don't buy from somebody who happens to have a brochure. I'm kind of nitpicky about this. I'm kind of a snob about it. Buy from somebody who deals with long-term care insurance a lot. That's very well educated and has a variety of options for you. Long-term care insurance is a possibility, but again, when it comes to income levels and asset levels, it's not right for everybody.
Right.
It's absolutely not right for everybody. There's a whole chunk of the population who are either more wealthy and don't need it, or not wealthy enough and can't afford it and shouldn't be buying it. Long-term care insurance would pay for it, though. And lastly, Medicaid. Number one provider of long-term care by a long shot in America is Medicaid. And you know what Medicaid means, Dave? Medicaid means that you are destitute. You got nothing. And I had a listener actually call me going through this, and I sat down with her about an hour and a half over a cup of tea, and we talked about it because she was going through it with her husband.
Wow.
And when we say destitute, these are the rules. Let's say John and Sally are married, and we'll pick on the male. John has dementia.
Okay.
And he needs help, and he needs to go to memory care. But to get help from the government and go on Medicaid to get any sort of help, because Medicare, your health care coverage when you turn 65 does not cover long-term care. Only Medicaid will, and Medicaid will only if you don't have any assets. And by no assets, I mean less than $2,000 to your name.
Wow.
Wow. So what happens is John and Sally, they go to an attorney, an elder law attorney. They will separate their marital assets so that Sally can protect half of her assets, half of their collective assets. John's assets need to be drawn down to zero, and that will all go to his care, and the surviving healthy spouse will have half the nest egg.
Wow.
That's the dilemma. So because you have a choice, you can let John's illness take all of your nest egg, or you can let John's illness take half of your nest egg. It is a horrible choice if you don't have one of those other options, family pay, self-pay, long-term care insurance. You want to go to Medicaid, he has to be spent down to nothing, $2,000. He gets to keep his wedding ring and almost nothing else.
Jeez.
Right. And it gets worse because anything that Medicaid spends on John's behalf, they want to reclaim after his death, say if there is a life insurance policy on him. He can keep the life insurance policy, but when he dies, they want a piece of that. They want to be reimbursed. The government wants reimbursed for the money that they spent on John's care.
Jeez.
Right? So good news, right? Sally, the healthy spouse, gets to stay in the home. She does not have to sell the home, even though she jointly owned it with John. Does not have to sell it. She can stay it as long as she lives. However, when she passes or when she sells, Medicaid wants to claw back some of that money.
Mm.
Right? Life insurance, some of these assets that were protected for Sally's benefit are only protected as long as Sally's around. So she gets to keep them. However, in the end, Medicaid wants to get reimbursed, and they will claw back any assets that were jointly held with John to pay back for the services that they paid for.
Dang.
Right? It's a mess, folks. It is a mess. If you're working with a financial planner, ask them the question, how can I prevent ever being on Medicaid? That was one of the things I would tell my clients at the time. I'd say, well, my job is make sure that you're never on Medicaid. I don't want to plan for Medicaid. And my job is to make sure that you never go on Medicaid. Because once you do, you're limited to a facility that accepts Medicaid patients.
Right.
And a limited
which
number.
Which could be horrible.
Could not be your standard choice.
Right.
And the availability of how many beds are available for Medicaid patients. Because they won't take 100% of the Medicaid patients. Right.
No.
So limited options.
You could be in the hallway.
Limited services and complete financial devastation. So my family, shout out to my sisters who have been dealing with my mom and her deteriorating health for the last few years. Actually, a lot of people in the community knew my mom and dad. They were very, very active in Lions Club. George passed away a few years back, but very, very active, really proud of their service in a service group of Lions Club of America and so forth. So a lot of folks, if you're out there and you knew Dolores, you knew her when, prayers for her, but for everybody who has families are going through this.
Mm-hmm.
Our families are going to go through it, and our extended families, and maybe ourselves. One of my best high school buddies lost his mom very early in life to it, early onset.
Wow.
Early onset. Died 20 years ago. You know, still pretty young. And I know people that are in hospice and they're not yet 60. Right? Because of Alzheimer's.
Jeez.
So, can be devastating, folks. Sorry to bring you down, but I want you to know what options are out there and what you need to plan for. Fortunately, for my family, my mother and father accumulated enough assets that she is able to self-pay. And we are confident that she will continue to have really good care at a really nice place and can self-pay. But it is not the norm.
Hmm.
Right? It is not the norm. Medicaid, unfortunately, in America is the norm. That's a scary thing. You talk about last week, we were talking about Social Security going out of money and Medicare going out of money, and then Medicaid never has enough money.
Well, they'll certainly have enough if they keep collecting after you're gone.
No, it's never going to be enough. Not when you talk about the aging population and the poor population. And there are more Medicaid stories in terms of what we've done here in Oregon. In terms of we've spread it out in a larger base, so we handle more kids. And what we saw the statistic, like 98% of Oregon kids have health coverage, and a lot of the ones who need it, you have Medicaid and so forth. but what they cover and how much they cover got limited. And right. That was the great Kids Hopper trade-off of one of them is we're going to cover more families, and if a kid gets cancer, they're going to be covered kind of thing. However, not everything is covered that you might expect from a private pay. And it's harder to get your, it's harder to find your providers. It's harder to get your services and so forth. So Medicaid is a juggernaut for our families, for our region, for our nation. All right. Let's come out. Let's take a break. We got one more break. And we'll finish up the news, noon hour here the day after Memorial Day. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem's listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by Hamblin's Nursery.
Welcome back, folks. Tough topic last segment.
Yeah, way to bring the crowd down.
Sorry, it's so important, though. People need to be aware, and it's a big part of my value system. And, you know, it's going to be pretty universal. Not every family will deal with it, but most families will deal with it.
Someone in the family.
All right, so since I'm sharing, we'll get this out of my system.
Oh, boy.
Here's why it means so much to me. I am apparently an old-fashioned sort. So don't be a hater out there, folks, but I live in a traditional marriage. Husband, wife, man, woman. I live in a traditional marriage, and in this particular marriage, the husband is the primary wage earner. Okay? So don't hate me because I'm a traditionalist, whatever it is. But so so I have internalized as part of my self-image is that I take care of this lady, right?
Right.
And I'm building these assets. This is my role. So this is my role in life, and I have accepted it, embraced it, and what have you. So I'm going to spend decades, have spent decades, will continue to spend decades, God willing, making sure she's okay. So then pick the picture I was talking about last segment with John and Sally. And when one of them, if I have to turn to my spouse and say, hey, I've just spent the last 40 years making sure you're okay, but because you're sick, I now need to divorce you and make you destitute, not divorce legally, but divorce as in separate the marital assets and make you destitute. That picture does not compute in my head. I can't spend my entire adult life with someone taking care of them to end up in a situation where I get to turn to them and say, hey, sorry about your illness. I need to make you destitute and a ward of the state now in the golden years and beyond. That's I can't live with.
That's hard.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's why it becomes so important in the planning thing, and that's why I have such a strong emotions about what families are going through. And especially, you know, when you have couples that have been together for so very long and have that kind of connection and have that kind of value system. Like, I'm going to turn to my spouse and say, I need to make you destitute now. I need to sell everything you own. You know those other rings? You have to sell those, but you can keep your wedding ring. You know your car? We have to sell your car. I'm going to keep the house, but do you get it? I can't. So
that does not compute.
All right, folks. Long-term care. Make some plans for it. Goodness gracious. All right, let's talk about something else. Shall we talk about something else?
Please.
All right. So some of these things, there are a lot of themes that carry through here on Newsmakers. I listened to our chamber president, T.J. Sullivan, this morning. And he said something that we say a lot. He said it in a slightly different way about how if you really want to help people, legislature, if you really want to help people, city councilors or activists or this and that, because why don't you help us create a society where people have economic security?
Right.
Economic security. He said, you want to lower spousal abuse? It goes down with economic security. Child abuse goes down with economic security. Needs for social services, mental health, and so forth goes down with economic security. Not just food security, but economic security. And what he means by that, what I read into that, is a good paying job, opportunities for good paying jobs.
Yeah.
Folks, and the way I've been saying it for years, good paying job is the best social program. Where is the disconnect? I'm sorry, Democrats. Where is the disconnect that you do not get that economic development builds our society for the better. It's almost like it's a religion to them that they can't do anything that helps people make money. Right?
Yeah, it's weird.
And this goes back to, I like to pick on Governor Kitzhaber, I guess, but Kulongoski wasn't all that different. Where, well, my goals are this in education and this in healthcare. And I said, okay, do you have anything in your bag of goodies that's going to create more wealth so that we can pay for these things?
Yeah.
Where is the religion that you can't have economic development? I mean, economic development ends up in tax revenue. And then you have the money to pay for your social programs. And you probably need fewer social programs because people have a job.
Right.
Those of us old enough remember the Clinton era and very, very low crime rates. He was getting a lot of credit for the crime rates. And I was just scratching my head. Well, wasn't it obvious to everybody the crime is down because people have jobs, because the economy was great.
Right.
The economy was great. If you wanted to work, you could work. People were driven less to desperation because there was opportunity for economic security. So thank you, TJ, for sending that message again in a very large audience. That's how you could help people. How about taking away some barriers for them going into the workforce?
Yeah.
Youth going into the workforce, right? How about taking away some barriers for people expanding their business? How about not bitching and moaning? Can I say that on the radio, Dave?
Sure.
Bitching and moaning when there are tax breaks given to companies to create jobs.
They always say it's to the wealthy. Well, those wealthy are creating
jobs.
They're
creating jobs. Let them get wealthy if they create jobs and people are paying the rent and feeding their kids and buying their baseball gloves and their prom dresses with the money from the jobs that the economic development provides.
Exactly.
And then for individuals, for the health, when we're talking about mental health is ours as well, self-esteem, pride, examples that you set for the next generation of working for what you get and so forth. Last thing on that is Amazon is hiring next month.
Nice.
Amazon in Salem will be hiring. I know we're out of time. So, but the news came out. So they're going to open in presumably around August to get 1,000 people to hire. It's going to be upheaval, folks, for entry level jobs at a presumed $15 an hour plus benefits at Amazon. And there's a lot of people out there that might just give it a go. Who
sure.
might be working in the trades, might be working in retail, might be working in coffee shops, might be working in food processing. But it's going to be an upheaval in the wages that are paid in our region. But, you know, economic security for more people sounds like a great social program.
15 plus benefits is better than work flipping burgers.
I'll say.
Because you don't have benefits there.
People might have to do that.
Right.
May have to pay up and start matching that in order to keep them flipping those burgers.
Not to mention delivery drivers, right?
Delivery drivers. Yeah, you got an Amazon delivery on the same day you ordered something.
Exactly.
That's incredible. Hey, folks, you've been listening to Newsmakers. I hope you found something of value in this last hour. Thanks for joining us. My name is Brent DeHart. I'm here with Dave Bourne. And we're going to be back tomorrow on Newsmakers 1430 KYKN.
See you tomorrow.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.